From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Thank you very much. It's 3 minutes past five. It is the November 3rd, 2020. How you doing? Let's crack on with today's programme.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, now, as usual, you can drop me a tweet. If you'd like to drop me a tweet, I'd like to have a tweet dropped on me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And that's how you reach me, and I'll read those tweets out as we go along. It's me and the me and you today, only for today. I've got Gareth Ike tomorrow. I've got a very well-known Swiss cardiologist tomorrow. But today it's me and you on a Tuesday. So I do look forward to hearing from you as we go along. Now, I have a feeling that the voice will deteriorate as we progress through programme. So I'm trying to rest my diaphragm. I'm dropping my voice into my diaphragm. They teach horse riders to bear down when they're on a horse, to drop all of their weight through their diaphragm into their arse. And I'm doing that in the hope that the voice will last. What are you shouting for, Baldy? I'm not actually shouting. I'm projecting my voice from my stomach. Yeah, I've had a rough couple of days with the voice. It does happen a couple of times a year. To most people who use their voices for their living, it must be said. So I'm a damn sight better than I was on Sunday. I apologise for the disgrace that was Sunday's programme. It was absolutely garbage. What happened was, I didn't realise how bad things were until the theme tune. And then I went to speak to you and say hello to you. And it all just went tits up. You know how it goes. And I had an hour and 15 or an hour and 20 minutes of material. And I decided the best thing to do was rush through the running order, get to the end of it as quick as I could. That's what I did. And I was finished at 11:22. And then I deleted the programme. Not in petulance or anything like it. It just wasn't worthy of an upload. Anyway, now listen, let me tell you this. I posted a pretty heartfelt message on Facebook yesterday. I won't dwell too much on it. I did read it and reread it before I posted it. And I was happy with what I'd posted. But on reflection, I think it might have been a bit better to talk about it to you on the show, mouth to ear, if not face to face, mouth to ear. I thought I maybe should have spoken to you about it and explained it a bit better. It's been a difficult 6, 7, 8 months for everybody. And it hasn't been any more difficult for me than anybody else. But in terms of creating the programme on a daily basis, covering the same issue day in, day out, it was initially very tedious, and then it became very soul-destroying, which I mentioned yesterday. Now, it's easy to say, you could cover other things, the nature of reality, natural health, etc. And I have dipped in and out of one or two other things in the period. But to be honest with you, it's kind of felt like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. You know what I mean? Do you get what I'm saying there? You're doing something else while COVID is going on. The lockdown, the effects of lockdown on people financially and medically, you really do feel like you're rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic if you're setting up discussions around other issues. Everything has been COVID. And it's all encompassing. And it kind of wore me out, as it's worn you out. And your family and your friends are sick of it and worried about it and anxious about it. And I'm no different. And I've got to emphasise, it's not about the mental effects of it, or worries or concern. It's not about that. It's just the tedium of doing the same thing day in, day out, and trying to be competitive. You might not understand that, but when you produce 5 live radio shows a week, there is a competitive element of it. You want it to be very good, and to sound good, and to be interesting and funny, and to capture the imagination of the person listening to it. But it's just driven me mad, really. And what I was trying to get across yesterday, and maybe I didn't do it very well, is that I need to reimagine the radio show, reinvent it. Now, Bono might be the biggest arsehole on planet Earth, although I don't think he is. I think there's a few ahead of him, personally. We know what Bono has become. He's become a foot soldier for the World Economic Forum, for people like Bill Gates, and for Big Pharma. We know this. Retroviral drugs, vaccines. Bono is a salesman now for these companies. He's not the man he was. And I talked about this on the programme before. It's very difficult for me because I loved the old Bono. I loved him. And when Bono was the old Bono, he said something very interesting. He said, and I'm very mindful of it today, funnily enough, he said, when U2 ended the music tour, to the concert tour to support Rattle and Hum, Rattle and Hum came after the Joshua Tree. The Joshua Tree, Beatles fans will lose their collective excrement now. The Joshua Tree was the 1980s Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. Amazing album. And they followed it up with Rattle and Hum, which is a hodgepodge of songs, very pompous album, where U2 took it upon themselves to educate Irish people and English people and European people about American music. Very arrogant. English people, Irish people, European people, they knew plenty about American roots music, country music, blues music. They didn't need Bono telling them about it. So Rattle and Hum was a failure, and U2 were bored with themselves, listening to themselves. They were bored of their own sound, and Bono famously said, we need to go away and dream it all up again. And that's the headspace that I've been in. You know, I'm not comparing myself now to multi-millionaire successful rock stars. Of course I'm not. But that's the headspace I've been in. And feeling like that. And I've done it many times over the years. I've just walked away. You know, I was kind of compelled over the years at times to just walk away from something. And yesterday I was kind of compelled to say, look, one of these days, I'll get up and I won't do the show and that'll be it. And I probably shouldn't have said that because I don't mean it really. I was channeling Matt Damon's character in Good Will Hunting. His mates come to get him and he's gone. And this has been on my mind and I've thought pretty hard on this over the last 24 hours since I put the post up, which I did read several times and I was happy to put it up, and I'm happy I did. And I did read the responses, which I rarely do. Not because it's beneath me to read your responses. I've said this before as well. I just don't have the bloody time. And broadcasters should treat kind words and harsh criticism with the same humility anyway. And I've seen a lot of emails coming in through the website, and I've read them. And yeah, I hear you. And a very strange thing happened yesterday. A really strange thing. On Friday last, I had a skip delivered. Now, a skip is a dumpster for the bloody Yanks listening. A dumpster. We say a skip. Massive container to put all kinds of rubbish into. Except for paints and flammables. They don't like paints and flammables. But you can put anything else in there. So it was delivered on Friday, and I asked for it to be collected yesterday. And a bloke knocked on the door yesterday morning to ask me to open the gate for him so he could come with the huge lorry and take away the skip. I'll get the key, says I, and the guy laughed out loud and he took off his hard hat. And of course, he's a regular listener and he gets his co-workers and family listening. His name is Andy. He works for Salford Skips for hire. Lovely bloke, and he was thrilled that it was me at the door, and he had a lot to say about what's going on. And that was nice. We had a chat and he drove away with a big smile on his face. I had a big smile on my face. And 15 minutes later, I've got a problem with my chimney stack. It needs a bit of flashing replacing. You know what flashing is? I haven't a Scooby-Doo myself. Men, and sometimes women, that know about these things. Well, you phone them, don't you? Because we don't know anything about it. But there's a little bit of a leak. We've had torrential rain of late, and there's a bit of a leak. And it turns out, a bit of flashing. So I rang, again, a local Salford firm. Guy answers. I need somebody to come around and get up on a ladder and fix me chimney, says me. What's your name, says the guy. So I gave him my name. And when I gave it, he started laughing. And he said, "Are you the Richie Allen?" I said, "Give me an effing break with this D Richie Allen shite." And he proceeded to thank me for making the programme, him and his wife. The timing of it now. This is minutes after I made my totally honest post, which wasn't attempting to solicit kind words or compliments or any of that garbage. But the timing was very funny. "I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. I'm going to reimagine the show if I can, or tweak it a bit as I go along, because we can't continue talking about this every day. It's making me miserable talking about it. There's only so many ways, as I said yesterday on the Facebook post, that we can call a spade a spade." Can you say that now in this era of political correctness? Call a spade a spade? How many more ways can we, how many more doctors can we bring on to say, "Listen, this is a completely unnecessary measure to deal with a respiratory infection. What more do we need to do?" And that's what's been on my mind for a long time, really. You know, I think you understand, really. I get the impression you might understand. And that's what I was getting at yesterday, and maybe I didn't do it as well as I did, you know, or as I meant to do. It was a bit silly. I was basically saying, look, one of these bloody days, I'm going to get up and think, nah, this isn't for me. Because it's happened multiple times in the course of my life. But I'm not planning to do that. And I'm going to reimagine the show as I go along. And very soon, and I know I've promised this before, but it is going to happen. We're going to do a live television programme on a Thursday night to go along with the radio programmes. I might tweak Sunday View a bit. There might be a Friday afternoon thing. I'm going to reimagine it, and hopefully it'll be easier for all of us not to be talking about COVID and the misery of it every day of the week. And that's why, dear listener, when we come back from this opening tune, and the old voice, God willing, will hold out for the rest of the programme, when I come back, we're going to talk about the US election, which I know nothing about. And that's nice. This is The Clash. This is The Clash on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, 14 minutes past 5. Yeah, The Clash are the second best band of all time, after the E Street Band, of course. The Clash and Clampdown on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Tuesday's edition. Welcome, welcome if you're just joining it. It's a pleasure to be with you. It really is. Shall we talk US election? Decision time there. Tens of millions, hundreds of millions going to the polls, but many voted before today, didn't they? In the belief that there is a choice, that they can change the trajectory of their lives by choosing between two establishment stooges, Biden or Trump. Creepy Joe or Donald Trump. Lady Gaga, that is an amusing thing. I did hear the news bulletin at the top of the hour. I heard Ollie Barrett in London. I heard Lady Gaga talking about Donald Trump, feeling that he has the right to grope people. Jesus, she's not up to date on current events, is she, Lady Gaga? Has she not seen the videos of Creepy Joe? Anyway, they're calling it the COVID election, or at least that voters are making their choice based on Trump's handling of COVID as opposed to what Biden might do differently. Massive coverage of it on UK television news. No surprise there. I think it's been that way here for about 20 years now, hasn't it? Since the Bush-Gore election. I remember Bill Clinton's campaigns, 92 and 96, and they didn't get this sort of coverage in the UK anyway. The state of Florida, as usual, is key. Are you familiar with the Electoral College system? Are you? You're not? Well, I'm not going to tell you about it. Florida is key. Will we know in the small hours of the morning, UK time, 5, 6 a.m., will we know who has won the presidency? I don't know. All sorts of talk about some states being too close to call, maybe. And, well, that'll bring trouble, won't it? Our Kay, her gingerness, Kay Burley, is in D.C., as is Adam Bolton. And one of the stories getting a lot of coverage today, I'm sure you've come across it here and in the US, is the fear of violence after the result is in, or if the result isn't in. Republicans saying the left and Black Lives Matter will riot if Trump wins, and the left are making the same predictions. Nigel Farage, Trump's biggest fan, it must be said, is in the United States, the leader of the new Reform Party. The Brexit Party is now the Reform Party. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. So Nigel is there, and he filmed himself in DC walking past shop owners who are boarding their windows up in anticipation of trouble. Some of them are some of them are putting Black Lives Matter signs up to allegedly appease BLM supporters who might go on the rampage after a Trump victory. It's surreal, isn't it? But it's all by design. None of this is spontaneous. It's all, in my opinion, it's all part of a script. Now, the Ginger Queen, ROK, had former Trump advisor Sebastian Gorka on with her this morning. Now, Donald Trump had been tweeting about cheating and governors. Make sure your governor doesn't cheat, because they are known for very bad things here. Talking about Pennsylvania. We have a lot of eyes watching, a lot of powerful eyes. They don't want that to happen. Extraordinary. Again, unprecedented. A sitting president on the eve of an election, or on the day that people go to the polls, threatening governors of certain states, saying, we're watching out for cheating. It's unprecedented, but I've believed for a long time, as you well know, that this is all part of a script. And the wider public is munching popcorn, watching it, gripped to it, glued to it, invested in it. It's not real, any of it, but they don't know that. They think it is real. It's crazy stuff. Trump might even think it's real himself. So his former advisor, Sebastian Gorka, Kay wanted to get into this with him, this tweet of Trump's threatening people about cheating and all the rest of it. Here's Burley, then you'll hear Gorka.
He was anxious about violence on the streets in Pennsylvania, and he thought that voting in the way that you have described was dangerous. This is what he has said on Twitter. I'm not sure if you can see it or not, but for the benefit of our viewers who can't, the Supreme Court decision on voting in Pennsylvania is a very dangerous one. It will allow rampant and unchecked cheating and will undermine our right. entire system of laws. It will also induce violence in the street. Something must be done. Is that a particularly presidential tweet?
Absolutely, and he is completely correct. I'm not sure how being concerned about violence is an incitement to violence. That's a very perverse way of looking at things, especially after the last 10 months, when it is left-wing Democrat voters from Portland to Seattle to Baltimore to D.C. that have created arson, havoc, and looting to the cost of more than $3 billion to small business owners. So, you know, the reason that D.C. is boarded up, walk down D.C. today, Kay, and look at the shops that have been boarded up. It looks like Beirut. And why are shop owners painting on the chip board that has boarded up their shops, Black Lives Matter, if not to placate the radical left? It's not the Trump supporters
Maybe it's because they think that Black Lives Matter.
No, it's because they want to make sure that they're not the ones who have their shops burned to the ground. Come on, show a bit of common sense, please.
Yeah. Feisty, eh? Let's hear a bit more.
Okay.
If it were Trump supporters that were the threat, they'd be saying MAGA on the shop fronts, and they're not. So the violence has been normalized by the left, and it is a disgrace.
Yeah, this is nonsense, of course, that the violence has been normalized by the left. You've got militant groups, far left, far right, got them everywhere, been around a long time. Militant extremist groups, or groups that think it's okay to beat up their opponents, are not new. They've been around since forever. Right, okay. What does Kay say?
Okay, what about Trump telling the far-right group, the Proud Boys, to stand back and stand by? How should we interpret that?
The Proud Boys. You remember that when Trump said, stand back and stand by?
Exactly as he said it. Don't take action.
But to stand by?
stand back, stand down, stand by and wait.
No, I didn't exactly say stand down. I said stand by, didn't they? Stand by
Do you know what the Proud Boys are, Kay Burley? Can you tell me what they are?
Tell me about it. Tell me what they mean to you.
No, you tell me.
No, I'm the interviewer. You tell me what they mean to you.
You raised it. So tell me why you're asking me.
I'm asking you because it's a far-right organization, as far as I am aware.
Incorrect.
And they are...
Do you know who runs the Proud Boys?
Please, do you know who runs the Proud Boys? I'm completely ignorant of them. Please tell me all about them.
Well,
I'm completely ignorant of them, says Kay. Don't ever get caught out like that. If you're going to bring up something like the Proud Boys, I don't know very much about them either. Just basic facts. Probably a little bit more than our Kay. But if you're going to introduce it into the conversation, at least have some semblance of knowledge, have a little bit of an idea of what the group is and who they are. But Kay is kind of caught with her trousers down here.
Well, that's a real indictment of Sky News, that you are ignorant about the organization you are asking me to comment on live. The Proud Boys is run by a black Cuban American. So how would that be far right?
You see, I would have annihilated him here now, but Kay doesn't. Kay's very flustered. Kay is not used to a guest being very aggressive with her. It's happened in the past, but it isn't very common. She, of course, should turn it back on him here and say it's preposterous to suggest that because somebody is black and because he comes from Cuba that he couldn't have a far-right outlook on life, that his politics couldn't be on the right or the extreme right. Are you mad, Mr. Gorka? Kay should have said, but Kay's a bit flustered.
All right.
Okay, so you don't feel that they are a far-right organisation?
A far-right organisation wouldn't be run by a black Cuban-American now, would it, Kay?
Again, jump straight down his throat. Why not? Are you telling me that black people are incapable of holding far-right points of view or viewpoints or opinions? Well, you shouldn't say that's racist because that would be a bit cheap. But you could say to him, explain to me. And he wouldn't have been able to explain.
I don't know. And I'm glad that...
Kay is doing her best. The upper half of Kay's body is doing its best to appear calm and in control. It's like the duck, isn't it? The feet are paddling 500 miles an hour under the surface of the water. Not going very well, Kay.
Glad that you offered me your view on that. I'm sure that my viewers will make their views on what you're saying this morning.
I'm sure they will.
What are your predictions on how the night might play out?
What do you think, Kay? He used to work for Trump.
I think there will be a very, very large upset for the mainstream media, for the so-called elite in Washington, D.C., for the swamp, for the Democrat Party. I think we will see a turnout the likes of which we've not seen before. And I think it's going to be echoes of 2016, when we were told by everybody in the mainstream media, from the New York Times to the Huffington Post to the BBC, that Hillary's got it in the bag. I still have saved the tweet from October 2016 when the New York Times said Hillary has a 91% chance of winning.
Yeah, he's obnoxious, of course, Sebastian Gorka, but then we know that, don't we? You almost feel sorry for Kay, but she's a lazy journalist. I'm going to channel Hayden Hewitt now. I imagine Hayden would say that Kay, after the programme, rage-fucked her producer for not knowing who the Proud Boys are or were and who their leader is or was or whatever. Lazy journalism. Get your facts right on the militant groups in the US and their leaders. Staying with post-election violence, the possibility of it, anyway, Kay had Will I Am on, Black Eyed Peas, Mover and Shaker, reality TV judge, who's in Manchester these days. Did you know that? Will I Am is based in Madchester. Successful guy, black, and he was on with Kay today, and Kay was asking him about Black Lives Matter. Here's Kay's question.
I wonder how you feel that the Black Lives Matter movement has changed America, Will.i.am, because I had a contributor on the programme earlier on today. We're talking about the shops and storefronts that have been boarded up in Washington ahead of the election result later on tonight. Many of them have Black Lives Matter painted on them, and my contributor was saying that was because the people that own those stores were fearful that if they didn't show solidarity with a Black Lives Matter movement, that their livelihoods would be destroyed.
All right. She was referring, of course, to her conversation with Sebastian Gorka. So what did Will.i.am say to that?
That's one person's opinion. I think Black Lives Matter is, at its core, is a peaceful demonstration to show that we at least matter. And that, if you, as a Black man, the word Black Lives Matter is like, well, wait, why do we just matter? Why can't we have importance? Why can't we lead? Why can't we, why does it just matter? So if you think of someone that has the audacity to argue that Black Lives don't matter when we've been, you know,
Nobody's arguing or saying that Black Lives don't matter. And to say that Black Lives Matter is a peaceful organization is ridiculous. It's preposterous. And again, maybe Kay was chastened, maybe she was chastened by her experience with Sebastian Gorka. And Will.i.am is another powerful bloke, another strong guy who speaks very well. Maybe Kay thought, oh, I better leave this one alone. Preposterous to allow him say they're peaceful, and ridiculous to allow him insinuate that there is a prevailing opinion that Black lives don't matter, because that isn't true anyway.
Misrepresented, not invested in, you know, we fill up the prisons. The people that patrol our communities are a lot of times harming the communities and helping the communities. We're not being educated as far as, you know, what's good for our health. So many of us are obese with diabetes based on the food that's adjacent to the communities that we live in. Our kids are not being invested in. Loans for Black families are lower than loans for, you know, white families. The amount of Black people that we have in leadership just in the tech sector is like invisible. So
it's not true that. And again, I love interviewing people like him because he's obviously intelligent, but he's not telling the truth. You need to jump in there and say, listen, a number of very, very credible studies were done recently to say that not just Black men and women, but every other minority is actually overrepresented in public life. Not just in the United States, but in the UK. Black folks, other ethnic minority groups, and people from you can also say people, if you want to say that people from the gay and lesbian community, I don't believe there's any such thing as a gay and lesbian community, but basically every minority group, whether it be a racial minority group or whether it be a minority group that is defined by sexual orientation, are overrepresented everywhere. Are overrepresented when you look at them as an overall percentage of the population. It's a fact. And she should say that to him. Not to be an arsehole, but to put it up to him. Don't come on here, Mr. Successful Black Man, very successful producer and singer-songwriter and reality TV star. How did you manage that? How did you get through all of that? All of those barriers, you know, those barriers that were there to prevent people like you succeeding. How did you manage it? She doesn't say a thing. Come on, have an argument. Arguments are good. They're fun. And you get to see whether the guy's really got anything other than the standard stock lines. Black people don't do so well in school. Black people don't do so well nutritionally. Get stuck into them. You're doing very well as a group, Mr. Will.i.am, right?
So anybody that's arguing that Black lives don't matter is blind to the realities that what
Black... Nobody is arguing that Black lives don't matter. Nobody. I've never seen a single person go on television or radio and say, listen, Black lives don't matter. Let's move on.
Black lives have to go through, not just in America, but all over the world. Nigeria, all throughout Africa, black people in Australia, black people in India. No matter where you go, people with dark skin complexion, it doesn't really seem like they matter to the systems that rule. So,
this is just nonsense. Guys like him want to victimize black people. They want young black men and women growing up believing that they're victims, that they are, that they are basically constantly being exposed to prejudice and to racism, when nothing could be further from the truth. Of course, they'll encounter racism and prejudice. Everybody encounters prejudice at one time or another. But it's ridiculous, this. And it's serious. This is a serious issue. It's a serious one, this. And there's an article in the Telegraph today, we'll come to it in a couple of moments, about the new hate crime bill, which is going to, seemingly unopposed, is going to become law in Scotland. Any more from him, Will?
I would have to, that one person's opinion, unfortunately, does not understand what it's like to be black in the world.
All right, fair enough. Here's what's frustrating about guys like Will.i.am. A few minutes later, Burley put it to him that he's in Manchester. The election is obviously across the Atlantic, and maybe he'd prefer to be there with his family and so on. And he talked about that for a moment. And then he said this. And this is kind of frustrating. You know, it gives you that, sometimes that glimpse of people who get a little bit of the bigger picture, but they can't make the leap. Listen to Will.i.am talking about technology and technocracy. Amazing.
You know, 2024 is an interesting time for humanity. There'll be so many technologies that we will adopt that will render so many jobs obsolete. It's not immigrants. It's not Mexicans. It's not people that are going to take these jobs away. It's the technology that we're training right now. If you have an electric car with self-driving mode, you're training that car to be a better driver by 2024. So if you're a truck driver, an Uber driver, you probably are not going to have that job in 2024. Definitely not in 2030. So if you're a check casher, if you're working at a retail store or a supermarket or a pharmacy, you're probably not going to have that job, because that little fast checkout counter is training the machine to be smarter and smarter to understand our needs. And if we're not preparing people right now, reskilling and upskilling, if that's not the conversation right now, then whoever is guiding us towards that technological autonomous tomorrow, they need to go. If you have a distraction agent, they need to go. If you have a chaos agent, they need to go. Because we know, look at what COVID has showed us. In 2018, what the hell was Zoom? We didn't know what Zoom was. In 2019, what was Zoom? We don't know what Zoom was. We know what Zoom is now. If you think of all the companies that have boomed since COVID, they're all tech companies. Our communities aren't, our kids aren't learning the way they should, because our leadership is not leading properly to make sure that we are protected and prepared for tomorrow. So for those that are, okay, you know, a part of the distraction, they need to go.
He gets it, doesn't he? He gets some of it. Every politician, locally, nationally, and internationally, is working to the agenda he just described. Why doesn't he see that? And he talks about reskilling people, because the technocracy is going to render millions, if not billions, of people unemployable with nothing to do. But reskill people to do what? Sit and look at a screen all day. Do you think these guys ever come across information about the World Economic Forum and its plans for the world? This great reset we talk about, this fourth industrial revolution, what it will mean for people. They get it up to a point, guys like him. Although I'm being told by a number of sources that Will.i.am is his music and his imagery is very MK Ultra. You know that sort of stuff. I'm being told MK Ultra. I'm being told that Saturn type imagery, that satanic imagery and stuff. I don't know. I'm not that well up on Will.i.am and his music. But he gets it up to a point, doesn't he? 20 minutes to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday. It is November 3rd. It's a big day for Americans. Although it shouldn't be. They should know better. It doesn't matter, really. It doesn't matter one way or another. Whether it's Biden, whether it's Trump, nothing will change. Things will get worse. It's how it always was and how it always will be. Here's a tune from Tom Petty. Love this. And the old voice has not deserted me yet, so we'll carry on. Now, I can't remember if that song is on Full Moon Fever or Into the Great Wide Open. Do you know the answer to that, do you? There's no prizes. I don't want any postcards to BBG Towers. I don't want any postcards. I'm not sure. Full Moon Fever, Into the Great Wide Open. I can't remember. It is exactly 14 minutes to the top of the hour. I am Richie Allen. Welcome to the Richie Allen Radio Show. Flying solo today. Gareth Ike joins me tomorrow. How cool is that, eh? It's been a long time since Gaz was on the show. Chatted with him briefly today. Top man. Dr. Thomas Binder, live from Baden in Switzerland, will join the programme tomorrow as well. Busy times. Busy times this week. Lovely. Marvellous. Hi to Mrs. Doyle. Hi to Drag Butler. How you doing, Drag Butler? Medieval world. I love the Twitter names. Hi to Anonymous in Western Massachusetts. I know that, of course, is Matt. How you doing, Matt? Nice to hear from you today, mate. Natalie Stacey as well. To Sooty's Rehab there. To Alan Pace Ninja. How you doing? 7647 says, Richie, you're very reinvigorated. I am. I'm always in good form, eh? I was in good form today. I think once I got to about 4:45 and I could still speak without breaking down, my mood elevated considerably. So, yeah, pain in the arse when you lose your voice, you know. I'll be honest with you. When I said on Facebook yesterday that I had a throat infection, I wasn't lying. I don't tell lies. I did have a throat infection. But also, and one of the reasons on Sunday morning why my voice was so bad was because Saturday evening, I was Bacardiing the bejesus out of myself at home. It's a lovely thing to do that. If you're ever stuck for something to do, if you're ever bored and you can't think of what to do with yourself and you're fed up of giving up after 16 pieces of the jigsaw that you opened, and what am I going to do? Bacardi the bejesus out of yourself. Right? Saturday evening, sat down and I switched on Sky News to watch the emergency press conference. And the bastard, Boris Johnson. And I was simmering and boiling as he was talking with Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance, Tweedledum, Tweedledee, his lawyers in what would you call them? His partners in lies. His lawyers in crime, for want of a better way of putting it. And I was getting along okay with it until I got up to go to the kitchen. And as I was going to the kitchen, Johnson said something about doing the second lockdown to preserve the future of youngsters. And when he said that, now I already had a sore throat anyway, I left a primeval horror film scream out of me. Scared the bejesus out of the future Mrs. Allen, and the two dogs, well, they're still not talking to me. Absolutely lost my temper and screamed at the telly and would have throttled that barrel of monkey spunk Johnson if I had him within arm's reach. I would have throttled him. Violence is wrong, children. Violence is wrong. Always, unless it's in self-defence. Back with you in 60 seconds and we will chat, me and you, about a very interesting article in today's Telegraph, which you may or may not have seen. You might buy the Telegraph, you might not. It doesn't. You can't read it for free online. We subscribe. Back in a minute.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
one of the nicest guys on planet Earth, Mark Bajerski. What a guy. Hey, listen, I just posted a couple of pictures of our, she's not mine. She only answers to the oft-mentioned future Mrs. Allen. I posted a couple of pictures of our golden retriever, Leia, who turned one today. 12 months old today. Born on November 3rd, 2019. And I took a photograph of her in the conservatory earlier on. And you are an eagle-eyed listener, aren't you? You are an eagle-eyed listener. You don't miss anything. There is a copy of the AA theory test, practical test and highway code book on the table in the conservatory. Who's the book for? You're asking me on Twitter. Well, it's obviously for the future Mrs. Allen. The future Mrs. Allen is going to learn to drive. Yes, she is. And if I was commissioning programmes for the BBC, I would do a deal with whichever driving school the future Mrs. Allen graces with her business, and I would film it. I would put cameras in every corner of the learner driver car. Because when the future Mrs. Allen gets lessons to drive, it'll be high comedy. Think Jerry Lewis, think Jim Carrey, think Eddie Murphy, think Richard, you know what I'm talking about? The great legendary black comedian, Richard. Jesus, what's Richard's surname? This is just confusion now. Richard, what's his name? Mother of God. Comedian. Pryor, that's the one. Richard Pryor. It'll be five times as funny. The future Mrs. Allen taken to the road. It'll be funny. So the dog turned one today. Golden Retriever. You know the story, don't you? Told you the story last year. There was a couple, very nice couple, professional couple in South Manchester who got the dog. They bought her from a breeder, and she turned their house inside out. They got her when she was 8 weeks old. When she was 9.5 weeks old, they wanted to kill her and then kill themselves. It's what retrievers do. You bring an 8-week-old retriever into a house and you don't know anything about dogs. Well, again, chaos reigns. So they reached out for help and we looked at it, not at it, I don't mean at her. We looked at the situation, at the jazz woman, who's my dog, who's 13 years old now, marvellous. And we thought, shall we bring this on ourselves, this golden retriever? And we did, and we're glad we did. She's been an amazing source of amusement and fun. And I tell you what, the lockdown situation, coping with it, and the misery of it, and it is fucking miserable sometimes, isn't it? I'm sorry. Managed to avoid swearing until this point. At least I think I did. It's been, at times, very difficult. Well, she's been a godsend. She really has. Amazing. So there you are. That's her. 12 months old today. And some of you are sending your own dog pictures, including the great Spiro Skouras. Great pal of mine. Activistpost.com. Spiro Skouras on YouTube. He's a great guy. While I'm still able to speak, let me tell you about this article in The Telegraph. Two articles. One in The Times, one in The Telegraph. Let's go to The Telegraph article first. Now, this is written by Tom Harris. I shouldn't really be doing this now because I'm supposed to be preserving my voice, but I'll do it anyway. The headline is, under the SNP's watch, Scotland is becoming an Orwellian state. Tell us something we don't know, Paddy. Was ever a piece of legislation in a democratic country more designed to fulfil warnings of a dystopia than the SNP's new hate crime bill? Tom Harris. He talks about, at the very beginning of the article, he talks about Scotland's, well, 70% apparently of Scottish people polled recently, they want independence. Now, you'll know it's not that long ago that Scotland had an independence referendum, and it was very, 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 very tight. And some people on the Leave side, some people on the Leave the Union side are still complaining that there was foul play evident when the results came in. The Scottish National Party lost that referendum narrowly, as I said, but it hasn't gone away. So he writes about this briefly And then he gets on to this, the new hate crime bill. Let me read this, if I can. Polls put support for independence at a record high, while support for the SNP at next year's Holyrood elections is well above 50%. Meanwhile, a senior SNP minister wants dinner table talk to be the subject of criminal charges. This is no exaggeration. It is literally what the Justice Minister in Scotland, Humza Yousaf, said. Dinner table talk to be the subject of criminal charges. Literally what the Justice Minister in Scotland, Humza Yousaf, said. Yes. Explaining to other MSPs, member of Scottish Parliament, why members of the Scottish Parliament, why his new hate crime and public order bill for Scotland should, unlike previous legislation, feature no dwelling defence to protect conversations held in private homes, the Justice Minister said, "Are we comfortable giving a defence to somebody whose behaviour is threatening or abusive, which is intentionally stirring up hatred against, for example, Muslims? Are we saying that that is justified because that is in the home? If your intention was to stir up hatred against Jews, then I think that deserves criminal sanction." Tom Harris goes on to write, "It has been some days since those remarks were made. Plenty of time for a civil servant or for Mr. Yousaf himself to clarify matters, to explain that his words were taken out of context, that he misspoke, that his intention was to appear more nuanced than his words sounded. But no such clarification has been issued. The minister meant what he said." Imagine that, dear listener. No dwelling defence. No dwelling defence. But can you imagine me? Just take me, for example. Now, I'm a nobody, but because I'm the only one here, well, you're there as well, but just me and you. Imagine me. Imagine you are censured, or summoned because somebody reported something that you said in the privacy of your own home. Like I might say, in the privacy of my own home, "Well, I don't care what they say. If they've got a penis and testicles, they're not a woman. I don't care what they do, what they say, where they work, where they go. It's no skin off of my teeth. But they're not a woman." Now that statement of fact That is going to be declared to be hate speech. Misogyny, transphobia, transphobic misogyny. Can't say that. And under the hate crime bill coming in Scotland, you might say something as innocuous as that in your own home with an invited guest or with a bothersome pain in the arse of a teenage son or daughter. They might say, "That's hate speech, Dad." Well, I don't care what you think. It's how I see things. And you might be in trouble. None of this is an exaggeration now. Harris goes on to write, "Where was the reaction in any normal, liberal, democratic nation?" And I use the word normal intentionally. "There would have been an immediate uproar. Every newspaper, every news bulletin would have led with headlines about this unprecedented and terrifying development. There would have been calls for Yousaf's, if not the entire government's, resignation. There would have been demonstrations, COVID allowing, of course. Airwaves would be chock-a-block with talking heads shaking their heads mournfully, or even angrily, at such a degree of illiberality. Such, as I say, would have been the reaction in a normal liberal democracy. Like England, for example," he says. "But not Scotland. Here, Yousaf's comments were met largely with the now usual apathetic shrug of the shoulders. There was a degree of tutting, to be sure, perhaps even some eye-rolling. While it remains permissible to indulge in such activities within the privacy of one's own home. But outrage? No, of course not. Why? Independence, of course," he says. when tolerance is exhibited only towards those ideas, individuals and behaviour with which you agree, to the exclusion of all else, it becomes dangerously intolerant. And so to answer the Justice Minister's rhetorical question last week, are we comfortable giving a defence to somebody whose behaviour is threatening or abusive, which is intentionally stirring up hatred against, for example, Muslims? Comfortable? Not at all, no. Determined to allow it to continue because it's none of my or any politician's damn business? Absolutely! Shouts Tom Harris in today's Telegraph. It's a brilliant and chilling article. The prospect, the spectre of children dobbing in their mum or their dad or nanny or granddad. And when you hear arseholes like Matt Hancock, the health secretary, saying that it's important that because we're screwing up the minds of children, because we as the government are fucking up the minds of the young, terrifying them with our prophecies of doom. It's important, he said, that we have a mental health counsellor in every school in the country. Where does that end up? What's going at home there, young Lucy? What kind of things does your dad be talking about now of a Saturday afternoon, young Michael? Oh, me dad, he's not too fond of the gays. Is he not? What do you mean? Well, he calls them sissies. What do you mean? Well, I talked to him about maybe taking up a dance class in the evenings, and me dad said, that's only for sissies. It's hate speech. That might need to be investigated by somebody from the local authority. Yeah, that's in the Telegraph today. I cross-referenced every claim made by Tom Harris, and he's absolutely bang on. This is what they want to bring in. I can't believe it sometimes. Have I got a tune for you? Speaking of dads and granddads and mums and dads and relatives, here's Mike and the Mechanics. On the Richie Allen Radio Show, it's exactly 6 o'clock. Well, it's nearly a minute even past 6 for Tuesday, November 3rd, US Election Day. The US decides. Back with you with more garbage in a moment. Garbage it'll be, I'm telling you. Tune. Mike and the Mechanics, the Living Years, and the Richie Allen Radio Show. Let's go to FSN in New York City to get the latest headlines from there. What's going on there?
From Feature Story News in New York, I'm Liling Tan. It's election day in the United States, and a record number of voters are expected to decide whether President Donald Trump deserves 4 more years or if challenger Joe Biden should take over. Investigations continue into Monday's deadly terror attack in Vienna, with authorities now saying the slain shooter may have acted alone. The African Union has condemned the killing of dozens of civilians in Ethiopia's Oromia region.
And then she just disappeared. I don't know what's going on. It's one of those days. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show, 7 minutes past 6. It is decision day. I wonder what Spiro Skouras reckons will happen later on. Will there be a decision? When I get up out of bed tomorrow morning, will we have a new president? Does it matter? Activistpost.com, check them out. Spiro Skouras on YouTube. Thanks for the headlines. Well, the ones you gave us anyway. Alrighty. There was something else I was going to do now. It's gone right out of my head. All right, okay. Fair enough. Right, okay. There you are.
The views and opinions expressed on The Richie Allen Show are those of the guests and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect the position of the host or other contributors.
Yeah, it's a mad world. It's a mad world when you have to remind people of that. The opinions you hear expressed on the program by my guests are theirs and theirs alone. And mine, when I express one, it's just mine and mine alone. And listen, I was going to read a story in the Times, but the voice is going to disappear on me. I'm going to go till about 6:30 today. Got a full show tomorrow. Dr. Thomas Binder will be on with me. Gareth Ike, my old pal, love Gareth, will be on with me as well. Be a packed old show tomorrow, and the voice will be stronger again. But that story in the Times, can I scroll up there? Can I just scroll up and have a look at it on the old rundown? It was written by the legal editor of the Times, a guy called Jonathan Ames. Now, if you read the broadsheets, you'll know who people like Jonathan Ames are. And this is a story about a hearing as it went before the Court of Appeal today, Richard Page. Have you heard about Richard Page? Richard Page is 74, septuagenarian, and he's a former magistrate. And he believes that he was removed from the bench because of his Christian beliefs. And he's taken that case to the Court of Appeal, and it began today. Now, I don't know what's happened since today. I don't know if there's any, what's the word I'm looking for here? Any update? If there's any news? I don't know. But this has been a 6-year battle. He was suspended from the magistracy. That's a tough word to say now, I don't mind telling you. The magistracy. And he was kicked out of his job at an NHS trust because it was alleged that he had discriminated against people who wanted to adopt children. And that he did this on television, as well as doing it in his job. And it goes back to 2014, Mr. Richard Page. He was one of three magistrates considering a social worker's report on a gay couple's application to adopt. And when he was discussing the case with other magistrates, Mr. Page said that he remarked it would be better for the child to be raised by a heterosexual couple. Now, he said that he expressed that view because, as well as it being part of his religious beliefs, also, one of the applicants, one of the gay men, had failed a previous application. Now, take that into consideration, but also, the child's foster parents wanted to adopt the child. So on the one hand, he had a gay couple, two men. And on the other hand, he had the child's foster parents. He wanted the foster parents to get the child. And he expressed his opinion that the child is better off with a heterosexual couple. And he was accused of homophobia. And he discussed this on a television programme in 2014. And he's been battling this for 6 years, you see. And the thing that pissed me off more than anything about this, and everybody's got an opinion on this, and I believe everybody's opinion should be heard. And I said this before, some of the best friends I've ever had in my life have been gay men. And you know, there's not even a cell in my body that tends towards virtue signalling. I mean it when I say it. Great, great, great friends. I don't think a child is better off being sent to live with two men or two women. And it's not because I'm an idiot. You get these idiots on social media talking about pedophilia and all that garbage. It's because I think the kid's better off with a mum and a dad. Got a better chance. The feminine, the masculine, and all that goes with that. Some of my gay friends vehemently disagree with me. Others agree, believe it or not. But what pissed me off about this guy, Richard Page? Well, nothing pissed me off about him, the former magistrate, was Chris Grayling. Remember him? Chris Grayling, one of the worst transport secretaries of all time? You wouldn't get him to look after a Thomas the Tank Engine set. You wouldn't get him to mind a Scale Electric set. He was the worst transport secretary ever. When Grayling was the Lord Chancellor, not only did he reprimand the senior magistrate, Richard Page, but he ordered him to undergo equality training. Your view that a child is better with a mum and a dad needs changing. Off to equality training you go, you bigoted bastard. Anyway, this hearing was scheduled for today at the Court of Appeal. I don't know what's happened. If it goes on for 2 days, 3 days, 1 day, I have no idea. Anyway, imagine it, 13 minutes past the hour. We've been on air an hour and 13 minutes. And we're only now getting to COVID. My plan is coming together. Reimagining, reinventing the Richie Allen Show. Whitty and Valance. Tweedledum, Tweedledee. The dickhead brothers. Chris Whitty, Patrick Valance. Chief Medical Officer and Chief Scientific Officer, respectively. Went before the Science Select Committee today. Do you think they were asked a tough question? Do you think they were probed on their ridiculously inaccurate modelling? Their prophecies of doom. Do you think they were? Well, you've got another think coming. They weren't. They were given an easy ride. Softball questions. And then they were allowed go. So COVID coverage. Let's go back in time. About 30 hours. Let's go back in time. Let's do that wavy thing. As they do on television. That wavy thing with the weird music. When they go back in time. 30 hours ago. You may have heard that the Brexit Party has changed its name to the Reform Party. Did you hear that? You did? You didn't? Well, I'm telling you now. And the Reform Party will make changing course on COVID their top priority in any future manifesto. That's the whole thing, right? So, Richard Tyson, Nigel Farage. No more Brexit Party will change the name to Reform, and Reform is going to campaign on taking a different course of action against COVID. The new Reform Party likes the Great Barrington Declaration approach. They like it. We like it. These are the scientists who say, open up society to those of us not vulnerable at all and take some steps to protect those who are. Reform Party. Richard Tyson, then, the chairman of the party and Nigel Farage's bestie, was interviewed by Sky's Adam Bolton. Now, what you are about to hear, dear listener, is the mainstream media at its most ugly and most careless. Ugly in terms of the behaviour of the presenter. It is terrible, this. And careless in that it doesn't give a shit that everyone can see it exposed in all its glory. This is the mainstream media. Richard Tyson has been invited on to speak about the Reform Party, and he was specifically invited on to talk about its main issue, COVID. Have a listen. Feast your ears. Richard Tyson on Adam Bolton.
We're rebranding the Brexit Party. We've applied to the Electoral Commission to be renamed Reform UK because we believe that voters want a choice about the many areas of public life that need reforming so that government works for the people, not for itself. And the most critical, urgent issue, of course, is reforming the approach to this terrible virus. Because what is absolutely clear is that the government's tried a lockdown, other countries have tried lockdowns, and what we're seeing is that actually they don't work. All they do is push the virus back. And what we're clearly seeing is that countries who have a different approach, such as Sweden, such as Japan, right, are actually being more successful. And let's remember, of course, it was the government's own advisers initially, Patrick Vallance and co, who recognised that herd immunity ultimately would be the only way that you could end up dealing with this.
All right, well, let's look at a few of these. I mean, I'm not a scientist, you're not a scientist, are you?
Bolton bizarrely just reminded Richard Tyson that he's not a scientist. Now, this is the only time in the last 6 months that Bolton or any of his colleagues has told a politician that he or she isn't a scientist. Politicians come on asking for lockdowns, more lockdowns, circuit breakers, let's fuck the economy. And Adam Bolton never says, you're not a scientist. Never. Wow. Tyson points out that Bolton's previous guest, a politician, was pro-lockdown, but not a scientist, and that Bolton didn't point this out. Adam Bolton doesn't like being told what's what by Richard Tyson. Listen.
But you're the one who's saying lockdowns don't work. I mean, the first thing one would say is tell that to the Chinese, tell that to the North Koreans, tell that to the Singaporeans, all of whom have used it.
Well, the reality is, look more locally at Sweden. Sweden are not using a lockdown. Right. It's working rather, and their situation is working
right.
rather
okay.
well.
Okay, all right.
That is the main evidence, Adam. And then
let's look take at the Sweden. Other scientists. Let's take Sweden.
Who recommend the great?
No. Hang on. You're mentioning Sweden. First of all, Mr. Tegnell, who is their main scientific advisor, has said he doesn't believe in herd immunity and doesn't think it's a solution. Secondly, the welfare state in Sweden operates that if people stop work, they effectively don't lose any money if they self-isolate for the period that they're required. So are you also supporting... Well, hang on. It's to make a lockdown effective. Are you also supporting the idea of increasing the welfare state so people can afford to take restrictions when they need to, which they are doing in Sweden?
Exactly, because there is a process where people are
Not exactly. Are you supporting the expansion of the welfare state?
You've asked
the
question,
extent?
I'm answering it.
You've
asked me a question, well, and I'm answering it.
This is disgraceful by Adam Bolton. When Tyson brought up Sweden, Bolton changed the subject totally, swinging it around to paying people to isolate. Starts asking Tyson, is he in favour of paying people to isolate? Tyson is on there to discuss why his party are anti-lockdown, and to talk about the alternative approach to COVID, which is to let people who are not vulnerable get back to their lives. And Bolton won't let him say what he wants to say.
And
this gets worse.
You have cited Sweden. I'm just saying you're talking nonsense, easily saying, oh, Sweden's the example. It isn't if you go into the detail of what they've done in Sweden.
Dreadful, huh? Bolton. But it gets worse. Don't mention Sweden. Don't mention other doctors. Gets worse again.
I'm sorry, Adam, you are talking nonsense. It's absolutely the
answer. They do not have similar circumstances to that we have in this country.
We can perfectly easily...
Sorry, in your country.
This government could easily increase the amount of payments when people are required to self-isolate. Because they haven't done that, then it's been very difficult for people...
So that's a policy.
I absolutely support that policy. That is basic common sense and common decency. Right. If you ask people to stay at home, you've got to be able to look after them. But the reality is, Sweden is an example where they haven't gone into lockdown, and yes, they've made mistakes. Everybody's made mistakes. No one's saying this is easy. It is difficult. But the scientists, the experts who recommend the Great Barrier Declaration, they recommend focused protection on the elderly and the vulnerable. Hear me out, because this is the other way. This is the better way, which is the Great Barrington way, recommended by scientists.
My point is, you and Nigel Farage...
This is disgusting. We know all about the Great Barrington Declaration, says Bolton, but he's not interviewed any of the scientists who've signed it. He's not spoken to any of them. I know, I see Bolton's programme every day of the week. And Tice, you could hear in the background, says, you seem rather reluctant, Adam, to allow people to talk about the Barrington Declaration. This is dreadful, this. This is the mainstream media laid bare for everybody to see.
Farage and indeed Donald Trump here are saying this is easy, it'll just go away. And the objective evidence is that
Adam,
the infection
you're not
rates...
Listening. It's very simple.
I said it's not easy, but actually I've got an easy solution. That's what Donald Trump's doing. But anyway, let's go further. Is this a proper political party? Are you going to disclose your finances in the way that you didn't with the Brexit party at the time of the election?
This is shocking stuff.
Honestly, that is frankly libelous, Adam. You know, we're a proper political party. We make all our returns to the Electoral Commission. It's frankly scandalous for you to suggest otherwise.
Outrageous. Bolton is no shame.
We are putting forward a credible recommendation that people look at the Great Barrington Way, which is the better way.
The point is, Mr. Tice, basically, you're saying the same thing as Donald Trump, and it's not gone great here health in America.
Honestly, Adam, you really do need to focus on what I'm saying. What I'm saying is...
I've read your declaration. I'm following the situation here.
That is the Great Barrington Way. That's what we're focusing on. There is a much better way to deal with this crisis. It's the Great Barrington Way.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Richard Tice.
That's what we should focus on.
Great to join us. Okay, we'll look forward to that.
Great to join us. Okay, we look forward to that. Bolton is completely flustered at the end of the interview. And it's because his producer has been screaming in his ear to belittle what Tice is saying, to interrupt him, to speak over him, to obfuscate and to make it difficult for the watcher, the viewer, to understand what's being said. Now, don't come at me with this right-wing shit. I have no time for Nigel Farage. I have no time for Richard Tice. I have no time for any of them. But what's right is right. Tice was saying, listen, there is a very learned group of people saying that there is another way to tackle this thing, whatever it is. And the presenter there in all his glory, with the producer screaming at him from the gallery, making sure that we don't get any real conversation, we don't get any real discussion. Dreadful stuff. People in Liverpool, a great city, of course, will be offered regular COVID-19 tests. Did you hear this today? You did. It's a trial. For the first time, testing a whole city regularly. Everyone living or working in Liverpool will be offered tests, whether or not they have symptoms. They will get follow-up tests every 2 weeks or so. You're talking about 500,000 people there. Yeah. Are going to be offered to take part in this trial. Regular testing. Some of those taking part will get a new test, which will give results within an hour, according to the BBC. And if those tests are successful, if the new test proves to be successful, it could be rolled out to millions of people by Christmas. The Liverpool pilot, I'm reading from the BBC website now, aims to limit the spread of the virus by identifying as many infected people as possible and taking action to break chains of transmission. A significant number of people who are infected with coronavirus show no symptoms, but the exact proportion has yet to be determined. The vast majority of people infected with coronavirus either have zero symptoms or very mild symptoms. This is important, of course. So the pilot will start this week, and it will include a mix of existing swab tests and new lateral flow tests. The lateral flow test is the test which will give you a result within an hour without the need to use a laboratory. Liverpudlians, are you going to get involved? Are you going to do your civic duty? Me arse. I hope Liverpudlians en masse will reject this garbage. But anyway, we'll have to wait and see. Alan, who goes by the name of Base Ninja on Twitter, is a Scouser, and he says he's not going to participate. So that's 499,999 to go. Apparently they're bringing in 2,000 military personnel to help with this. Fucking hell. Eh? Sir John Bell says, Oxford University, I hate to say this is a game changer, but it could be. Could be good. He said the rapid tests have a turnaround time of 15 to 20 minutes. So they're going to ask every citizen of Liverpool to take part in a trial where they get tested regularly. To discuss this earlier this morning, BBC Radio 5 Breakfast spoke to Margaret Harris of the World Health Organization. Be Jesus, do you remember Margaret Harris?
We have to learn the new dance, the coronavirus dance.
Yes.
To protect ourselves.
That fool.
We have to learn the new dance, the coronavirus dance, but to protect ourselves.
That idiot. She was on again. So presenter Rachel Burden assumes that this scale of testing, testing everyone in the country regularly, will help return society to normality. She asks Margaret Harris, doctor, if you please, how often should we be tested?
And can I ask, how often would you need to test people to get an accurate picture of what's going on?
Well, so that's the issue indeed. And that's one of the risks. If for instance, you tested today and you were negative, you're like, oh, yay, I'm fine. Great. I can go out and do what I want. No, you can't, because 5 minutes later, if you didn't take the precautions, if you didn't avoid the closed settings, if you didn't ensure that you're in a well-ventilated space, if you came too physically close to others who were potentially infected, you could be 5 minutes later infected with the virus. So the risk is that people think it somehow gives them some kind of certificate, I'm virus free. You're only virus free until you come in contact with somebody who has the virus.
Yes, this is the madness of it. Don't get excited about being mass tested 70 times a month or 15 times a year or 3 times a week. Don't get excited about it. This is crazy stuff, this. They're asking Liverpudlians to take part in a trial where they're tested regularly. But this WHO woman is saying it doesn't really mean much, because we give you a test and it comes back in 15 minutes that you're negative. But you could take a saunter down the road to the newsagents, bump into a COVID patient, and well, you're faked. This is madness, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's something that's really worth.
Oh, yeah. Listen to the co-presenter. Now, what's this guy's name? Hang on. He's co-presenting with Rachel Burden today. A guy called Edwards. Let me tell you his name now. What's his name? Edwards. Rick Edwards. This is the presenter. He's just heard what Margaret Harris has said, and then he says this.
Harris.
Yeah, that's something that's really worth emphasising. It doesn't give you a negative test result. Doesn't give you carte blanche to just sort of do whatever you like.
A negative test result doesn't give you carte blanche to do whatever you like, says the presenter. So what's the point in having a test every couple of weeks then?
And these are new rapid tests that are being talked about. So ones that don't need to get sent off to a lab, and you can get a result sort of within an hour, maybe even 20 minutes. I guess we eagerly await to see whether these tests work effectively. Margaret, thank you very much for your time this morning. Dr. Margaret Harris there from the World Health Organization.
I mean, is he there to ask her any questions at all? Or just to agree with her? to sum up, editorialise what she said. Yeah, it's very important to emphasise that.
Yeah, that's something that's really worth emphasising. It doesn't give you a negative test result. Doesn't give you carte blanche to just sort of do whatever you like.
Oh, they're garbage, aren't they? I mean, they really are garbage. The BBC. Oh, Jesus. About 30 seconds later, you know the way the BBC is accused of hiring lefties? Well, so-called lefties, anyway. I don't consider these people to be lefties. Let's call them woke people. Woke people. Is it a fair accusation to say that the BBC is staffing its offices and its programmes with woke people? Is it? I don't know. The same presenters we just heard, Rick Edwards, Rachel Burden, a few seconds later, referred to an earlier interview where they were told that if you are told to isolate in South Korea, you are sent a care package from the state. How nice of the South Korean authoritarian government to tell you to isolate and then to send you a care package. And our woke presenters get to talking about what they'd like to have in their own care packages.
So Rick and I were rather taken with the idea of the care package that you get in South Korea. Under their track and trace system, if you were asked to isolate because you've been in close contact with someone, you do get some financial support. Limited, our correspondent said, didn't she? Yeah. But you also get this care package, snacks and things like that. And I was asking Rick, what would you put in your care package? And your answer was?
My answer was a bumper pack of Twixes.
Yeah.
And maybe a What Car magazine. I mean, yeah, I've got simple tastes. I'd be delighted with that.
I mean,
what are you putting
magazine?
In your? Just because I want to get an electric
boring.
Car. I want to get an electric car and I want to research it.
Hey, just talk to me.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Let's take this off air.
He wants to get an electric car. She says, talk to me because she has an electric car.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Hey, Jeremy Clarkson. Jeremy Clarkson, can you imagine it? Do you think Jeremy Clarkson misses the BBC, eh? Eh? I'm not his biggest fan either. Woke presenters, producers of the BBC with their electric cars. Thank God Nikki Campbell was off today. Nikki Campbell, the world's greatest virtue signaller, was off. Hence, this guy Edwards sitting in for him. Nikki was probably visiting Britney Spears because he's always looked out for Britney, you know. Yeah, so if in South Korea you're told to self-isolate, they send you a care package. So if you lived in South Korea, you've no choice. The army are outside your apartment block. What are you going to have in your care package? Give me a litre of Bacardi and a litre of Coke and a six pack of potato, cheese and onion crisps to see me through. That'll do me. Professor David Livermore from East Anglia University, microbiologist. He signed the Great Barrington Declaration and he was on Julia Hartley Brewer's show today. She asked him, is there enough evidence, do you think, to support a second lockdown?
No, I don't think that at all. And we're given so many clearly ropey statistics at present. I mean, the one that's been flagged over the weekend is this suggestion that 4,000 people per day will die. You look at the graph that comes from, it shows 1,000 people per day dying at present. In fact, it's about 250. So even looking now, it's out. So how can it possibly be right a month hence when it's supposed to peak at 4,000 per day? 4,000 per day is more than peak death in Brazil or India. Brazil's got three times the population. It peaked at about 12 or 1300. India's got 20 times the population. It peaked again at about 11 or 1200.
But this is the thing.
The numbers just don't make sense.
The numbers don't make sense. They don't make sense to frankly, a kid doing their GCSEs, let alone to cabinet ministers and indeed, I don't know, chief scientific advisors and chief medical officers as well, one would think. So what are we to make of the idea that people who we should be able to trust and who I certainly absolutely did trust, certainly at the beginning of this process. If Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance said something, that's it. They're eminent people in their field. I'm trusting them. I now don't trust a word they say, and I don't want to be in that position. Because I'm not a hoax theorist. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. But why are they pushing forward facts which simply can't possibly be true?
Why do you think, Julia Hartley Brewer, are you ever going to grow a pair of ovaries and stop with this bullshit of, I don't want to be thinking like a conspiracy theorist. If it looks like a horse, right? What do you think is going on? Christ, you had a statistician on BBC politics today, the politics show, BBC Two at lunchtime. Joe, is it Swinburne? Is it? Is that her name who presents that? You had a statistician on demolishing this graph that was displayed by Whitty and Valance last Saturday. The graph that said we could end up with 4,000 deaths a day. They're lying. Why do you think they're lying, Julia? What's in it for them? Start asking questions, love. You know, it's all very well bigging yourself up, tweeting out about car crash interviews, you know, highlighting yourself as some special interrogator of politicians. It's bullshit. It's narcissism. You've got to do better. You've got to start calling these people liars to their faces. That's what you do. When they lie pathologically on your programme, you must say to them, you're a liar. I know she had Robert Jenrick on today, the housing secretary. And she asked him a few times. She asked him several times. Had the government looked into what the economic and medical cost of the second lockdown would be? Have you war-gamed it, basically? Have you done a study into the effects of the lockdown on non-COVID people and on the health of the nation? And Jenrick tried to flannel and to bluster and to waffle, and he was obviously lying through his teeth, and she let him off in the end, and then she went on Twitter boasting about her interviewing skills. Fuck off! Call him a liar on live radio and then ask him why is he lying. Why are you lying, Robert? What are you doing this to people for, Robert? Your story doesn't add up, Robert. You're lying through your teeth. Millions of people are losing their jobs. Suicide rates are going through the roof. People are not getting cancer treatment and they're dying. People are not being diagnosed with cancer and they're dying. It's a tsunami. Why are you lying? But of course they don't do that. Ah, and finally for today, one of the most evil aspects of this announcement of a second lockdown, terribly evil, is curtailing children's sport. They've basically stopped and banned children from extracurricular activities. No sport for children. Now, without putting too fine a point on it, I think that is feckin' evil. It's evil. It's terrible. It's destructive. Gail Emms played badminton for England and won an Olympic medal, so she's obviously very good. Here she is talking about the impact of stopping sport for children or preventing children from playing sports. Listen to this.
I'm actually getting very emotional about this. It's making me well up. It's just sort of the realisation what, you know, is sinking in actually. So bear with me if I do get a bit emotional.
That's all right, but I understand it because for some people, sport is absolutely everything. And I don't just mean, you know, watching your football team on a Saturday afternoon, just the ability to get out and be physically active.
Exactly. You know, for me, sport was my happy place when I was a kid. You know, I didn't always fit in at school or, you know, as a competitive person, I wasn't going to win the maths prize or anything like that at school. But sport, when I was on that hockey pitch or that netball court, badminton, whatever it was just where I could be me. And especially for a young person who could be struggling with so many things and so many things to deal with, that to be able to do that and to be able to find that place that they can be themselves with the right people around them, to have role models and coaches and encouragement where they might not get that at home. All these things are just absolutely huge for somebody. And it goes on and it creates those habits into adult life. And you have, it's here, it's your heart. It's not just your body, it's everything.
That point you make about creating habits, that's really important. Ooh. And as our tweeter said just there, those habits can be quite easily broken. And then you lose the appetite and the commitment to it. And that can really impact, particularly on teenage kids and particularly on girls.
Massively. It's just, you know, when a teenage girl finds something that they want to do, and again, finding that right group of people, that's it, they're hooked in. But it just takes the slightest little thing, you know, so a comment here or there, or a situation, a circumstance like this pandemic, and that's it, all gone, and it'll be gone forever. So these are these precious little moments that we need to do everything we can to try and keep, you know, keep that going.
It's evil. It's evil to deny children the opportunity to play sports with other children. children who love to play sports. I mean, I'm not qualified to talk about the impact that is having now and will have on children going forward. I'm not qualified, but I know it's very bad. Tracy has tweeted me, "How are you, Tracy? Richie, years 7 and 8 at Salford City Academy have been selected to be part of a COVID study for Public Health England, meaning they get tested regularly, twice before Christmas, then every half term after. It's voluntary for now," says Tracy, "until it isn't." Thanks very much for that, Tracy. I don't know anything about that. Right, that's it for me. It's coming up for 20 minutes to the top of the hour, flying solo today. And the old voice is starting to give out now. I thought it might, but I'm going to rest it for the rest of the evening, get over my infection, and I'll be back with you tomorrow where I will have help. I'll have help. I will have other people to carry the load. Dr. Thomas Binder, MD, will be on the programme, and Gareth Ike will be on the show. The first time for a long time that Gareth has graced us with his presence. I'm really looking forward to both of those guests tomorrow. That's 5 o'clock UK time. Thank you for listening and putting up with me today. And we'll do it all again tomorrow. Closing out with Bob Seger, who's, he's up there with Bruce Springsteen for me. I worship Bob Seger. God love him. This is We've Got Tonight. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves. I'll see you then. Bye.